What's up? What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Periodic Table. This is the weekly science news show that I do over here at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/BrandonHanna, but also on podcast feed, which I'll get into the promotion of that a little bit later. But before we do, yes, this is the weekly science news show. Did I say that already? Oof, it's been a while since I've done this, but of course, I am your host, Brandon Hanna. You might know me formerly as a host over at AfterBuzz TV or the Popcorn Talk Network, or you might have also seen me over at the Movie Trivia Schmodown. But what you might not know is that I'm also a mechanical engineer, and I have a passion and a love for all things science and technology, and I want to share that passion with the world. And am I an expert on 99% of the stuff I talk about on this show?
Yes.
Absolutely not. But that's okay.
No,
but that's okay, because this is one big virtual science classroom, and all we are all here to learn together, but we are not here learning alone, because I have a very special guest with me. You've seen him, or maybe you've heard him, for all you audio-only listeners. I'm really trying to push that audio-only thing if you haven't noticed, but you might have seen or heard him before on this show. Oh my God, I don't even have my notes up. Here we go. I'm going to make sure I get my credentials right. He's also a host. He is also a producer of the Off the Rails Network, formerly known as the PJ Campbell Network, if I'm not mistaken. And he is the head writer of the Movie Trivia Schmodown. It is the one and only PJ Campbell.
What is going on, man? I'm happy to be back hanging out with you, because science rocks. We're trademarking that. Didn't want to get into the copyright area with Bill Nye on that. So, you know, we're just here hanging out. It's a nice Saturday morning. I'm happy to be here, man. I fucking missed you. Can I swear on here? I forget.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, I hit that little explicit button whenever I upload these things, just in case. I heard it doesn't hurt. So
fucking right, it doesn't.
but we're super happy to have you on the show, PJ. Super happy to talk about science with you. And we have a great show for you all here today. Starting off with potty trained cattle could help reduce pollution. Can't wait to get into that. That sounds super interesting. And we're also going to talk about the science behind Major League Baseball's sticky stuff, which I think will be a fun conversation, because you and I both love baseball, PJ.
Goddamn right we do.
And we love science. So it's going to be great. And last but not least, we do have a special segment for you all here today. Another round of Scientist Spotlight. We're going to talk about Margaret Vogt, I believe is how you pronounce her name, and how she transformed the study of all viruses, which I think is very pertinent to world news here today. But before we get into all that, let's jump right back up to our number one story here this week. And we are talking about potty trained cattle could help reduce pollution. And this story is coming to us from Science News. And as always, guys, the links to all the articles referenced in this show are in the description down below if you want to check them out for yourself and learn a little bit more once we're all done blabbering about it. But you can lead a cow to water, or a water closet, it says in this article. But can you make it pee in there? It turns out, yes. Yes, you can. Researchers in Germany successfully trained cows to use a small fenced-in area with artificial turf flooring as a bathroom stall. This could allow farms to easily capture and treat cow urine, which often pollutes air, soil, and water. Researchers reported this online on September 13th in Current Biology, and components of that urine, such as nitrogen and phosphorus, could also be used to make fertilizer. So, killing multiple birds with one stone here, PJ.
Really disrespectful to the birds that ran into the buildings in New York earlier this week, Brandon.
Was there birds that ran in the buildings?
Yeah, did you not see that? There was like a mass extinction event of birds because they were running into the skyscrapers in New York.
No.
Oh, that's, I thought, horrible. You knew. Sorry.
No, I did not know. I did, but as Sean Sullivan would say, they're just drones anyway. They're not.
Yeah, real. Birds aren't real, apparently.
No, they're not real. But you know what is real? You are real, PJ. You are very real. And I know you have thoughts on this very real article, so I would like to hear them. What are your overall impressions of this article? Did you learn anything new that particularly caught your interest?
It's so funny, because, you know, I've always assumed that cows are very smart creatures. And so when I was reading the article and kind of looking into it, you never really realize how they're very dog-like, and that's kind of what they were doing. I'll say this. They're like, can you make a cow pee where we want it to pee. Look, man, if you lock anything into anywhere at any time for a long period of time, it's going to pee there. You lock me in a room for too long, I'm probably going to pee in that room too. I get it. But, you know, they were smart. They treated them like dogs, give them treats if they did it, you know, what they wanted. And if they didn't, they sprayed them with a water bottle, which I thought was really funny. And it was like the cow was like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this to me? But what I like is that they were talking about it kind of deals with the pollution in the air and like the stuff into the water. Like, it really is a big deal because, as we've seen, like right now, climate change is a very fucking real thing. And finding ways to try to like downplay any sort of pollution and find ways around it is never a bad thing. And so I have to give these scientists credit for actually like sitting and thinking about, with these cows, what are we going to do? How can we try to like mitigate some of the damage that they might personally do, whether they mean to or not, to the environment around us?
Yeah, definitely. You know, like learning more about climate change and how different agricultural and, you know, food industries in particular, like could affect the environment, not just, you know, emissions from cars and power plants and things like that, the super obvious things. You know, this is actually a conversation I was trying to have with a relative a week or two ago. And I was like, okay, well, we were talking about climate change. I was like, I know that, like, you know, big factory farms produce a lot of emissions and they are very harmful to the environment in a lot of different ways, but I didn't understand what those ways were. So I felt this article really helped clarify a lot of that for me, and also like instilled me like with a little bit of hope that there are ways to improve the way that we do things, and in ways that I did not expect. And something as fun to talk about as teaching cows to pee and poop in certain areas.
Yeah.
That actually one small change, instead of just letting them go to the bathroom wherever, is actually like monumental to the overall like health and safety of not just the animals, but everyone on the planet. And I didn't know that the average cow could pee 10 liters a day. I feel like
they have like four stomachs. So like that checks out.
I feel like I've heard that before, but I don't know for certain.
I don't either. So I'm going to say that that is a scientific fact. And in the comments below, you can let us know if it's true or not. So, you know, comments and stuff. But it really is like they're massive, massive creatures. So to think about just how much water they're probably intaking on a daily basis, and then they're putting that much back out, that's freaking crazy.
Yeah, and I appreciate you encouraging the fan engagement, PJ. That helps out a lot. I appreciate that. But what was that?
I said subscribe button. Hit the subscribe button.
Do it. But there are apparently 1 billion cattle worldwide. And like I kind of mentioned a moment ago, in barns, cow pee typically mixes with poop. I like that they just flat out say that in the article. They don't try to use more elegant terms. They're just like, nah. Pee and poop. That's what it is. Let's just get down to business here. But the pee and the poop, it mixes on the floor to create a slurry that emits the air pollutant ammonia. And out in pastures, cow pee can leach into nearby waterways and release the potent greenhouse gas nitrous oxide, which is a very serious greenhouse gas that, you know, like we always talk about carbon dioxide, which is, of course, in its own right, super serious and a major, major contribution to climate change. But also talking about something like nitrous oxide, I think is a pollutant that maybe is not quite in the forefront of a lot of people's minds. But it's interesting, like I said, to see how, like get a little more details of how animals, when I'll just say like mistreated, I suppose, can cause a lot of harm. And we need to do a better job of respecting these animals as much as possible and getting some degree of respect in return as much as we can, you know, assuming that a lot of these animals are intended for slaughter. So, I mean, you can be humane about it, but at the end of the day, it's still kind of, it's a little difficult, I think, for some people to get past. You know, we have a lot of vegan friends, you know.
We do. We do. I mean, I started to do that a little bit more. Remember, at one point I was also, and I still do, like, I don't eat a ton of meat all the time. Every once in a while, yeah, sure, why not? But, like, you know, I try to think about that stuff. It does matter. And I think you're right, like, trying to be humane and treat nature and, like, the creatures around us better is a thing we should do. I think that sometimes we do take the environment and the animals around us for granted. And so it's better in doing stuff like this that we're trying to be humane, we're trying to help and also make the environment a better place.
Yeah. And kind of like to add on that, I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on this. You mentioned, you know, how they like gave the animals treats and they like kind of treated them with both like positive and negative reinforcement, the same way that you would do with training a dog. Does it? Yeah. So I don't know like how like to put it exactly, but knowing that cows can be trained like dogs can in certain ways, it means that they're on a certain level of intelligence. Does that make it a little more difficult for us all to not maybe try to go a little more vegan and say like, hey, that I didn't realize cows were that intelligent. That I don't know how I feel about that.
I actually agree with you. It was something I did think about while I was reading it, because they do, in a way, now they become a little more human because they're a little, you know, they think they're smarter. It gave them a human trait and personality like a pet. Like, we're not eating our dogs and cats either, you know what I'm saying? Like, we train animals that become more than animals, and that quickly became that with them as well. It's the same thing we see with pigs. There's a lot of pigs that are trained in the world to be pets. Like, we, one of our very close friends has a pig for a pet. Like, it does, it really kind of heightens and makes me more aware of how we treat and look at things around us and how maybe there's better ways for us to do the things that we do.
Yeah, for sure. But I do think this is a step in a positive direction. You know, like I said, you talk about the greenhouse gas emissions, the ammonia emissions, the environmental impact as a whole. This is going to lead to less greenhouse gas emissions, less water pollution, less soil pollution, and it's going to lead to happier and healthier animals at the end of the day, that will now have more comfortable living spaces that won't be covered in fecal matter and other things. Mm-hmm. But also this is a potential win-win for both human beings and the cows themselves, and also another win for the planet.
Yes,
I feel like so. Overall, I thought this was a particularly interesting story. It's one of those stories that I like to talk about on the show because it's like, it's kind of funny because we get to talk about pee and poop, and I like to think that that grabs people's attentions. It's like we're teaching cows how to potty train. That sounds ridiculous, but then when you get into it, you really do see the impact that such a thing can have. And
make sure pee and poop is in the title of your video.
Oh no, I didn't do it. Ah, I always get this clickbait thing wrong. but yeah, really interesting story, guys. Please, I encourage you all to go check it out for yourself and learn more like I did. And now when I have debates about climate change with my family, I'll have, you know, a few more facts to throw at them, which is always fun. Thanksgiving's coming up soon, guys. You got to get your facts ready. Get your facts in that fact arsenal in your brain. I don't know what to call that.
A fact arsenal is the coolest thing I've ever heard. Does Batman have a fact arsenal?
Oh, he's Batman. He definitely has a fact arsenal for sure.
Perfect.
I'm like, that almost could sound like something dirty. I'm like, fact arsenal. Okay. Fact arsenal? No. Okay. Let's move on before I say something stupid. But before we do, I just want to thank everybody watching at home. As you can kind of tell, we're doing things a little bit different starting this week. Normally, this show is live on YouTube, but we're going the pre-recorded route just for the sake of everyone's schedules and just to see, like, maybe the numbers can perform hopefully a little better, because now I can premiere this video at times that are more suitable for people to watch and not forget about me, because I don't want you to forget about me, because if you're forgetting about me, that means you might just be forgetting about science, and we can't have that, not in 2021. So please, guys, like this video. As PJ mentioned, leave a comment down below if you want to get in on the conversation. Hit that like button. And of course, if I already said the like button, I'm going to say subscribe button. Oof.
I knew what you meant.
Thank you. Thank you, PJ. Thank you.
I got you. And look, you guys, do not forget about Brandon, or we're going to have to see him create a song that said, forget about Hannah. It'll be like a version of Forget About Dre that Dre did when everyone started forgetting about him. We don't want to have to do that to you, because I don't want to see Brandon rap. So subscribe, like, do all the things, because I don't want to see the whitest man I know rapping about forgetting about him.
No, no, no. If you do not want to see me rap, but if you do want to see a science communicator rap, I've become a huge fan lately of Dr. Raven, the science maven. She's an excellent science communicator out there on YouTube, on Twitter. Go check her out. She does a lot of great raps that, in particular, some lately that talk about COVID-19 and how the vaccines work and how we battle the disease. And it's a really great way to consume scientific information. I highly encourage checking her out. I also highly encourage. Oh, sorry, PJ.
I was going to say, do they talk about how we battle the stupidity as well? Just asking for a friend, and that friend is me.
I think she handles it as elegantly as possible, probably more so than I would if I were.
Get your goddamn fucking shots, damn it.
Yes, please. See, you're bad cop, I'm good cop. Exactly. It works perfectly. And also, I want to encourage you guys, as I was about to say before I was rudely interrupted by PJ, if you are listening on audio only, you know, Spotify, Google Podcasts, you know, I think we're on Stitcher too. We're on a few other places where most podcasts are sold. If you're listening there, please really appreciate it if you rate the show, leave a review there. That really, really helps out. Really trying to push the podcast thing. I think it's just a great space for this show to thrive and grow an audience. And I'm going to need your support to do that. So please help me out if you can. With all that being said, let's move on to our second story for the week. We're going to talk about the science behind Major League Baseball's sticky stuff. And this story is coming from Boston University. And this there's actually like a video Boston. Component to this article. So I highly encourage you guys checking out that video. Again, link is in the description down below. But let's say that there is one of Major League Baseball's worst kept secrets, and that is that pitchers have always used foreign substances on the ball to gain an advantage over hitter, a practice that has been against the rules since the beginning, but it was rarely enforced. First, they used pine tar for all of you non-baseball fans out there. That is the sticky substance that baseball players put on the handles of their baseball bats, just out of safety. You don't want the bat flying out of your hand when you're swinging at 100-mile-per-hour fastball. Totally get it. But also, if pitchers kind of get away with getting a little bit on their hands, getting a little bit on the ball, making the ball a little sticky, it gives them a better grip on the baseball and allows the baseball to spin faster. You get higher spin rates. And of course, they've upgraded from using pine tar to something you might have heard about in passing called spider tack. Like chemical engineers like formulate this stuff for Major League Baseball players, which is just crazy. Essentially, but I think spider tack, I mentioned in the video, was initially used for like professional, like world strongmen.
Yeah. It could like hold bricks and stuff together. And that was what they were using. Mm-hmm. Is the crazy.
So you don't drop a giant stone on your foot or on somebody else, which totally get it. That's great. Obviously great for safety purposes, but, and that's actually kind of something I want to get to. I know I'm like a little bit excited about this topic, so I'm going to probably go on some random tangents, but it's great to have, because I know PJ, you're a huge baseball fan.
I am.
So it's great to have you here to discuss.
You and I bonded over baseball for a long time. And when I saw this on the rundown, I even texted you. I was like, yeah, this was for us.
Yes, for sure. But okay, let me compose myself, get my good hosting training abilities in line, and don't just ramble.
Ramble all the way.
My eyes are widening for all you audio only listeners. I want to ramble so badly, but I'll start off. Okay, so sticky substances on baseball, faster spin rates, right? Why are spin rates so important? Well, excuse me, for all kinds of pitches, fastballs spin a certain way, sliders spin another way, curveballs spin another way. And that's how the baseball gets its movements, because it creates higher points of pressure on one side of the baseball versus the other, which allows the baseball to move as it's traveling through the air. It's like actually like a really interesting phenomenon. And so Major League Baseball is kind of cracking down on this, because I would say in like recent years,
pitchers it got out of hand.
Yeah, it's gotten a little out of hand. Spin rates have gone up. Hitters have been underperforming because pitchers are just throwing nasty curveballs and sliders and these crazy rising fastballs that literally that extra spin rate, as they mentioned again in the video, could make a pitch move like at most maybe 2 inches more up in the air. But that's enough for a hitter to completely miss it. Hell, if the pitch moves a few eighths of an inch, I feel like that's the difference between a home run and a foul ball.
Absolutely. So
it's a huge advantage. And they've been using a mixture of rosin, which is a powdered substance basically that is legal in the game. It's on the mound to help pitchers get a good grip on the ball. But mixing that rosin with sunscreen that pitchers heavily would apply to their arms, and it creates a super tacky, sticky substance. And I think that's where Major League Baseball drew the line. They're like, okay, this is getting ridiculous. This is getting out of hand. So I wanted to get your overall impressions on this story, PJ. What do you think? I want to get your like just honest opinion of the use of foreign substances in Major League Baseball for pitchers, obviously, to apply.
So it's kind of weird, right? Because here's the thing. In the video, they talked about this a lot, and it was something I kind of disagreed with in a way, is that they kept saying that baseball should really be a batter's game and not a pitcher's game. And I think that in a way that almost fundamentally misunderstands that it should be everyone's game, like from pitcher to hitter to catcher to the baseman to the outfielders, it should be everyone's game, right? Like, so there is in a way this dueling personality of what should baseball be about. In doing this, do I think that it's right that the pitchers were doing this? No, not really, because they're... One second. I apologize. My dogs are barking.
Oh, no. Dogs are barking. Wow. This is a first on the periodic table where we have to take a dog barking break. Well, let me see here. Can I... we'll be okay. We'll be okay. We'll roll in
the dice. I apologize that, you know, the corgis are grumpy on a Saturday morning. So what I was getting at is, I think that in a way they're totally altering the game by doing what they're doing, because it was putting the pitchers ahead of the hitters and trying to play them a little bit. At the same time, there is something to say about maybe less runs can make a game more interesting, or at least less hits, so that now it keeps the games closer to even at times if everyone's playing up and doing this, right? But as we've seen, once the MLB started to come down on it, the rates of the hits started to go back up. And we've seen a lot of games over the last couple of years, like since this really started to become a thing, we're starting to see some of those games where it's like 20 runs in a game. And that's kind of crazy. So maybe there is something to be said about, I'm not saying it's right, but if it's negating a little bit of having these games that are like excessive blowouts, maybe the pitchers being able to control the ball a little bit more is not necessarily the worst thing. But maybe we can also find a way to make it more even keel across the board, so it's always above board versus creating a substance to do it. Because I love a great game of pitching. Like, some of my favorite games in baseball are the ones when like the pitchers are just on fire and like you're not seeing a lot of people get on base because the pitcher is like really, really going for it in this game. It's exciting. It's fun. You never know quite what's going to happen, because even if one slips by like in the eighth inning, now suddenly the game can change depending on how everything's been going. So I think that there's something to be said about it's everyone's game, but the pitchers can kind of control that narrative. It's about finding a way of let them have the control that the pitching can still be what they're doing without also having to use some foreign substance to do it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I will say I do think it's a bit creative because obviously a rosin bag is on every single Major League Baseball mound. But we also, well, I hear a little bit of an echo right now. I don't know what's going on there. But
no echo on my end.
Oh, it's still there for me. I don't know. That's weird. Well, leave a comment down below. Do you hear an echo on your end? But anyway, it's a interesting show back, to say the least. But I wouldn't want to do it with anybody else, PJ. What was I going to say? Rosin bags on every single Major League Baseball mound. However, so those are perfectly allowed. But also sunscreen, like, is also, like, allowed, right? It's like, hey, like, you don't want to get sunburned while you're out playing baseball every single day. Totally understandable. So I thought it was like a pretty inventive solution by Major League Baseball
pitchers
to kind of just mix the two together and go, wow, this is pretty tacky. I could use this to get a better grip on the baseball. So it's like, you know what? Like, I like tip my cap a little bit. I'm like, all right, that's pretty inventive and technically not against the rules until they recently started cracking down on it. But I do remember hearing when all this was first coming out that some hitters, I believe, were also, you know, like kind of on the side of the pitchers where it's like, I want the pitcher to have a good grip on the ball because for my own safety, you 100%. Know, sometimes the baseball can slip out of a pitcher's hand because they don't have a good enough grip on the baseball, especially with the way that modern day baseballs are manufactured. They're very like slippery and the pitchers actually like have to like, you know, take their hands and like really like rub the baseballs to get the surface of the baseball, something that they can actually like grip onto, which when they're first, you know, made, I know, I think like part of the process of making baseballs is they actually do rub dirt into the baseball to give it like that, you know, better grip. But it's oftentimes when it gets into the pitcher's hands in a game, there's still not that good of a grip, and so the pitcher is like, you know, rubbing, like, I don't know if they can rub dirt on it anymore, but like rubbing dirt on it, rubbing rosin into it, rubbing their hands on it in general, just trying to do anything to roughen up that surface just so they have control over the baseball,
because and we've seen so many loose pitches hitting players in the past. Like, you don't want that, and if you can stop that type of control, or you can keep that kind of control so it doesn't happen, that's really great.
Yeah, it's for sure. I think there definitely needs to be some kind of like a balance, like you were like mentioning, where they have a good enough grip on the ball where people can still be like safe, the ball's not going to fly out of their hands, but also like not too much of a grip where all of a sudden it's like, hey, is that a baseball or a wiffle ball? Did you see that movement on that curveball? Like, that's insane. You know, because, you know, I want to also get into the guy again. I feel like I'm just like bouncing all over the place. I want to get into like the physics of it a little bit too. It's, you know, I kind of mentioned up front what exactly is going on, but I think I've always thought it to be pretty cool physics of how a curveball works, let's say, where it's like, how can you get the ball to move like that? And it's literally just putting a top spin on the baseball as you throw it. And the video, I think, does a good job of illustrating the pressure differentials, and it creates higher pressure on one side of the ball than the other side of the ball. And that pressure differential pushes the ball in one direction or the other. And the faster the spin rate, the higher that pressure, and the higher that pressure, the more the ball is going to move. And so that's kind of like what's going on here. And I just think it's a really interesting story that combines something that a lot of people enjoy, which is sports and baseball, and but also a little bit of physics and also a little bit of controversy, which is always good to like a certain degree.
No, 100%, man. And that's why I was so excited to talk about it a little bit, because I think it is important to talk about too, because again, you and I are baseball fans, and baseball over the last decade or so, there's been a lot of conversations around the game itself and like what is its relevance nowadays, how can we continue keeping it relevant. Like, America's Pastime has lost fans along the way, and like, we're trying to also get new people to come on board. And something like this is a very interesting topic because, again, it talks about the competitive nature of the game in a way, right? Because that's why they were doing it. It's about being competitive. It's about trying to come up on top. It's about trying to be able to control what you're doing in the moment. And it's just interesting.
Yeah, for sure. It kind of reminds me of like old school race car drivers where they would like kind of break the rules a little bit, but not get caught. And yeah, like, you know, like be able to like, yeah, do certain things where it's like, it's like, it's kind of in like this like shady area in between the rules, but like, you know, it's going to give us like a little bit more traction on the tires. It's going to give us a little less drag on the car, and it's going to be enough to like win a race. And I love that. Like I said, to go back to it, I love that like level of inventiveness, which is totally, I think, like one of the reasons why like this is like major tangent territory. I loved the movie Ford v Ferrari because it kind of like got into like all that a little bit. Yep. Where like Christian Bale is like, hey, we could like slide a block under this part of the hood, and like it'll lift the car up to the regulation height that it needs to be at. And then once they inspect the car, we can remove the block and the car's going to drop back down. It's going to, you know, keep us closer, and it's like, it's going to make the car faster for like these, you know, various different ways and stuff like that. I always find super interesting. And I wish there was a way in sports to encourage that level of creativity and ingenuity. And to kind of take it back into science, I remember there was this great chapter of one of Bill Nye's books, Unstoppable, Harnessing Science to Change the World. He had a whole chapter about NASCAR and how their rules and regulations make it so that, you know, the engineers and the driver and the pit crew and everybody involved on a racing team, there's no room for creativity or ingenuity. And if you were able to change the regulations, but like you could still have rules and regulations, but change them in a way that encourages inventiveness. Like, you know, for example, instead of saying, you're only allowed to, you know, your car has to have X amount of miles per gallon, and you're only allowed to make, you know, I forget exactly what it was, but like basically saying that, how cool would it be if the rule was instead of your engine having to only be able to have a certain miles per gallon, imagine if the rule was instead, you were only allowed to use a certain amount of gas in the race. Sure. And so now you have to make an engine that can run a full race and win on only a certain amount of gas, like stuff like that. Okay. So I wonder if there's like a way to like apply this type of creativity to a sport like baseball too, where it's like, you're not allowed to use these substances, but if you can find a way to make the ball a little tackier using substances you are allowed to bring onto the mound,
right?
That's fair game. Kudos to you. So I don't know.
I think there's absolutely something to be said about that. And I think that applying Bill Nye's kind of methodology to that actually checks out.
Yeah, so I don't know, that chapter always like stuck with me as someone who like, I grew up like in like a racing family, like my grandfather, my great grandfather, my mom, and like me for like a little bit racing go-karts when I was like 10 years old. So it's like stuff like that I always find like particularly engineering and interesting. I was gonna say, and as an engineer, fun. Yeah,
you're not an engineer.
Yeah, no. But anyways, I think, guys, we are rambling on quite a bit. So let's move on to our special segment for this week, Scientist Spotlight. We were talking about Marguerite Volk and how she transformed the study of all viruses. And this is coming from Science News once again. And they say here, when nobody else wanted the job, Marguerite Volk stepped in, working from early morning until late at night in a small, isolated basement laboratory at the California Institute of Technology. Volk painstakingly handled test tubes and petri dishes under a fume hood, incubating pipeting. I don't know
pipening how to pronounce or that something. Word. Yeah,
I'm so sorry to all my real scientist friends out there. I'm just a measly engineer. What do I know? Centrifuging and incubating again. She was trying to grow a dangerous pathogen, poliovirus. So to give a little background here, it was 1952, and polio was one of the most feared diseases in America, paralyzing more than 15,000 people, mostly children, each year, and parents wouldn't let their children play outside. There were quarantines instituted in neighborhoods with severe polio cases, and scientists were desperate to find out any information about the virus, but many were hesitant to work with the virus, as they refer to in this article, as this infectious agent. And we have a quote here from Martin Haas, professor of biology and oncology at the University of California, San Diego, said everybody was afraid to go to that little lab in the basement. But Vogue went ahead and did it. And of course, it says here that Haas was also a personal friend and collaborator of Vogue's for over 3 decades. And so why are we talking about Marguerite Vogue? Well, as you can kind of tell from what we've talked about so far in this article, she really spearheaded work that everyone was afraid to do, to come up with a polio vaccine that ended up being, I believe, the oral vaccine that was most administered to children throughout the nation, and really put an end to the polio pandemic. And not just that, it created an outline, it created a format for how scientists approach vaccines today, how they make vaccines for not just polio, but also COVID-19 and you know, various other infectious viruses that thankfully, unlike COVID at the moment, thankfully are no longer a huge problem in our day-to-day lives, thanks to this groundwork that Marguerite Vogue was able to accomplish in a time where nobody else wanted to do it, which I just think is absolutely remarkable. So that's why I chose this incredible story for Scientist Spotlight. But PJ, I wanted to throw it over to you now. Is there anything that you want to add, any components of this story that I didn't mention that maybe you want to shed some light on? I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
I just thought it was interesting because I'd really never heard her name before until I read the article that you had sent me, and to realize how much it kind of plays into what we're dealing with right now, where we had the scientist who was standing up against this bigger than life friggin' virus that was crippling people. Like they talk about it in the article that there was places where kids would have polio and they would quarantine entire neighborhoods. Like people couldn't interact. No one could go out. And so much of that is what we're dealing with now. And she stood up to it and figured out a way to do it. And then people don't realize she's the one who basically brought an end to all of it. Like her year of locking herself away, messing with this stuff where people didn't even want to go down into that basement, she's completely changed the entirety of science and the way that we deal with vaccines and things like that. It's remarkable to me, and it just goes to show how much trust and time and effort she put into herself and into science in a way that I think that people around her did too, because it didn't seem like people were not wanting to take the vaccine after that. People wanted to get out of the house and not have to worry. And it's just weird that the 50s were really not that long ago. And we seem to have regressed in a way where she fought so hard for people to be able to live and get out and do the things that they do. And all you had to do was trust the science and trust the people behind it versus what we see now. And it was a stark contrast, if you will, to current events. And I really took that away from the article.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it is, I think, really interesting looking back and seeing the public awareness and people being genuinely terrified of the polio virus, to the point where Vogue didn't even tell her parents that she was working on the polio vaccine, who both of her parents were acclaimed scientists in Germany. And she didn't want to tell either one of them that she was working on this. Like people who would like understand the potential sacrifice of getting this close to the virus. She didn't want to tell them because she knew that they would be angry at her for putting herself at such risk. But Vogt, she totally succeeded and remained virus free, as the article states. In 1954, she another research associate, Renato Dulbecco, she and Renato took on this task, and they published the method for purifying and counting poliovirus particles, and it was immediately used by other scientists to study variants of poliovirus and by microbiologist Albert Sabin to identify and isolate strains of weakened poliovirus to make the oral polio vaccine that was used in mass vaccination campaigns around the world, which is what I kind of mentioned in my own words a moment ago. But it says here, perhaps even more importantly, the poliovirus plaque I don't know how to pronounce. I'm so bad at pronunciation. Plaque assay, I'm going to say.
That sounds correct.
Okay. Enabled scientists worldwide to analyze animal viruses at the level of individual cells, a field known as molecular virology. And Vogt and Dulbecco's approach remains the gold standard for purifying and counting virus particles, including recent studies of SARS, the virus that causes COVID-19. The method used to measure how infectious a virus is and isolate strains of a virus for further research is ubiquitous in labs around the world. So I know that was kind of a mouthful, guys, and I'm just so bad at pronouncing words, but it's okay because you know what? I'm learning a lot of these words for the first time. As much as I love science and technology, I don't have a lot of experience in a lab. And so, you know, I don't know some of these terms, especially when it comes to chemistry and biology. I'm learning. And I think it's important for me to show guys that even though when it comes to the physics of a baseball spinning, I got that down like you wouldn't believe as both an engineer and a baseball fan. But when it comes to this stuff, you know what? I'm just as clueless as a lot of the people listening. And that's not in a negative way at all. I mean, because we're trying to learn this stuff together, right? I think that's the whole point of this.
I was going to say, we're all trying to learn it together. And it's okay to be clueless as long as you lean on the right people to learn the stuff that you need to learn. Not like random Facebook posts, but like, listen to the scientists, listen to the people who are trying to teach you. They want to help. They do. Whether you want to believe it or not is another thing, I guess. But I think it's high time that we definitely go back to trust the scientist, trust the people around you. They're just trying to help you.
For sure. And, you know, I think that's something that's really important as a science communicator, that when you don't know something, don't pretend that you do at all. You know, I'm just kind of like in my baby steps here of trying to step into this incredible field of science communication and like scientific outreach. And there's a lot of people that do this that are way overall more knowledgeable than I am. And I love learning from those people and watching those people like a Kyle Hill or an Emily Calandrelli or like I said, a Dr. Raven, the science maven. Like these people are like, you know, people that I like, you know, totally like look up to and like try to get like, you know, a grasp of how to do this from. And I think that's such an important takeaway that I've learned from all of them. It's like, hey, when you don't know something, like it's cool. Just like, hey, just be honest about it. So like, I like to be super vulnerable and honest with the fact that it's like, I don't know how to pronounce this scientific word and I'm supposed to be like the science dude. But it's okay because you know what, we're all here to learn. And I think at the end of the day, if I can just kind of like help guide us all in a better direction where we can learn more and like, as I like to say, demystify the science of things, then I think that's the best that I could do. But enough of that. I'll get off my soapbox of science communication and we'll wrap up this story here. I think this was an incredible story. And I love doing these scientist spotlight special segments because it allows me to learn about people who have made incredible contributions not only to science but the world. And you know, until today I didn't know anything about the creation of the polio vaccine or the brilliant people behind it. So shout out to Marguerite Vogt for spearheading such an important campaign that now leads to a lot of viruses being mostly eradicated, and hopefully we will see the same thing with COVID in the not too distant future, to be optimistic. PJ, any closing thoughts on this article or anything else?
You nailed it. I was like, thank you to Marguerite for what she did, because she's laid the groundwork for everything that continues to move forward. And thank you for bringing it to my attention. Like I said, I never had really heard her name until today. And that's really telling, considering she was kind of the cornerstone of helping us get vaccines to kill such a major, major disease, and is now the cornerstone of figuring out this one. Like, we need to put respect on her name. And I think it was really great that you found this, and very timely that you found this, and that we could talk about her today.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm just happy that you were able to join me for this show here today, PJ. I think we all grew a little bit smarter, a little bit wiser. And I appreciate you being here to join me on this journey. And I appreciate all of you watching and listening at home. Please, once again, hit that subscribe button, that follow button, that like button, leave a comment, leave a review. It helps out a lot. And you know, I think it was a little bit of a rough show today, to say the least. You know, it's been a while since I've been able to do this show consistently, but we're back, baby. We're talking about science, and super thrilled to do this. So once again, thank you all. And PJ Campbell, PJ underscore Campbell, at PJ underscore Campbell, where can the good people find you online?
That's pretty much it. Over on Twitter, Instagram, PJ underscore Campbell, over at the Movie Trivia Shmodown. Hey, I write the questions. Be nice to the writers. We're only human. Off the Rails Network. We do stuff over there. Come hang out, leave comments. But most importantly, thank you, my friend, for having me. Guys, hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, do all the things. Leave a comment below. Do cows have four stomachs? Brandon and I need to know.
We do need to know. I refuse to look it up. I need you to tell me.
Exactly.
But yes, I am, of course, your host, Brandon Hanna. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BrandonHanna07. If you're watching on YouTube, you've already found my YouTube channel, youtube.com/BrandonHanna. And if you're listening on audio, then you've already found me there, but maybe you're one or the other and you haven't found the other, and that's okay. youtube.com/BrandonHanna. Like I just said, also, I think the best way to find me on audio only platform is go to anchor.fm/the-periodic-table, and you'll be able to find my made Anchor podcast page with links to all my various podcast platforms that this show is currently available on. And do I have anything else to plug? Watch me in the Movie Trivia Showdown, where I'm really mean to the question writers, but it's okay because it's all in good fun.
Is it? No, no. Is it, Brandon?
No.
Is
it? Peter doesn't like that. Abort. Abort mission. Abort. We will see you all next week, guys. And as always, thank you for taking time out of your day for this.